Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to Infigen Energy 2011 Interim Results U.S. Investor and Analyst Briefing. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Tuesday, the 1st of March, 2011. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Miles George. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and welcome to this presentation of the interim result for Infigen Energy for the six months ended 31 December 2020. Sorry, 2010. My name's Miles George, and I'm the Managing Director of Infigen Energy. Joining me for this presentation are Mr. Jeff Switala, our Chief Operating Officer, Mr. Chris Baudoin, our Interim Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Richie Farrell, our Investor Relations Manager. Jeff, Chris, and I will run through the slide presentation released to the market on Friday, and there will be an opportunity to ask questions following the presentation. The slide pack presentation should also be read in conjunction with the management discussion and analysis pack and the financial accounts released concurrently last Friday. Turning then to the presentation, slide two sets out the agenda, and I'll move on to slide three. Infigen faced a challenging six-month period. Adverse external factors, including foreign exchange movements and depressed energy markets in Australia and the U.S., more than offset improved wind conditions, improved operational performance, and contributions from recently completed assets. Controllable factors achieved good outcomes, including improved turbine availability and further reductions in corporate costs. Turning to slide four, our safety performance was adversely affected by several incidents with third-party contractors at our U.S. sites. We've put in place a range of measures to improve this performance. Production and revenue were up in Australia, primarily from an additional four-month contribution from the Capital Wind Farm in New South Wales and a full-period contribution from the Lake Bonnie 3 Wind Farm in South Australia. Increases in revenue in Australia were mostly offset by a decrease in revenue from the U.S. and Germany, caused largely by the appreciation of the Australian dollar against the U.S. dollar and poor wind resource in Germany. EBITDA was down, reflecting the marginally higher revenue offset by increased costs associated with increased capacity and with turbines transitioning off warranty, and a positive contribution from lower corporate costs. The increase in net loss is mainly the result of higher depreciation and net financing costs associated with an early interest rate swap termination, a lower contribution from U.S. institutional equity partnerships, and lower merchant electricity prices. I'll now hand over to Jeff Switala, our Chief Operating Officer, to discuss the operational performance for the period.
Thanks, Miles. The Infigen team is focused on optimizing the performance of 36 wind farms in operation or under construction in the U.S., Australia, and Germany 24 hours a day. Our activities encompass asset management, energy markets, construction, development, and associated corporate activities and functions. We regard the safety of this team and our service partners in the communities surrounding our wind farms as our first priority. Over the last 12 months, there's been an upward trend in our 12-month rolling average lost-time injury frequency rate, shown at the top of the table on slide six. This is defined as the number of incidents per million hours worked. This has been driven by nine lost-time injuries involving our service contractors at our wind farms in the U.S. This is clearly a concerning trend and one that has our full attention. In line with our strategy of being a leading specialist renewable energy business, we continue to grow our operating capacity in Australia and expand our capabilities in a number of areas in pursuit of improving access to customers, asset performance, and cost control. Miles has just provided a high-level overview of our first half results, and I'll expand on these in more detail at respective country level in a few minutes. However, before I do that, at our last result presentation, I stated that one of our key challenges is controlling any increase in the service and maintenance components of our operating costs as our assets transition off the initial warranty period. The next couple of slides provide further information describing the composition of our operating costs an example of how these operating costs change as an asset moves off warranty, the drivers of these, and finally, at a high level, the response strategies aimed at minimising any increase in cost. As described on slide 7, wind farm operating costs may be grouped in four areas as shown on the diagram. A major component of these is the turbine O&M costs, and during the initial warranty period, these are covered by the turbine manufacturer. Following the end of warranty period, the owner assumes responsibility for all turbine O&M costs, including in particular scheduled and unscheduled service and maintenance. The estimated step-up in post-warranty operating costs is shown in the graph, and experience tells us that this can be in the range of $5 to $10 per megawatt hour. Although I hasten to add that the range can vary widely and includes estimates for unscheduled maintenance. There's clearly scope for further containment of cost increases as the post-warranty maintenance market develops. This requires a clear understanding of the drivers of the cost increases, which are described further on slide 8. The three primary drivers of post-warranty turbine maintenance costs are the higher than expected component failures experienced across the industry, increased component costs, and increased skilled labour costs. The last two reflecting the phenomenal growth of the industry over the last 10 years. As a result, understanding our component failure rates is in turn key to accurately forecasting future service and maintenance costs. There is a scarce but growing source of data on this, bearing in mind that we have the operational data for over 2,000 megawatts over a 5-year period, which we compare with the limited industry information. More importantly, component failure rates better informs our O&M response strategies, starting with an increased emphasis on preventative maintenance and taking advantage of the rapidly developing competitive market in post-warranty maintenance as third parties enter the market. For example, competitive tendering for all maintenance services, direct sourcing of components, and strategic relationships with turbine manufacturers where appropriate. I'll now describe the individual country performance, starting with the US on slide 9. Production increased by 13% due to better wind resource, and our turbine availability remained above our financial year 11 target of 95%. Energy market conditions in the US continued to be depressed, reflecting reduced economic activity in particular. However, due to the largely contracted nature of our assets, we still achieved a healthy average price per megawatt hour. Slide 10 provides further detail around our wind farm operating costs in the US. The increase in US wind farm operating costs is as a result of the drivers that I described earlier and the transition to post-warranty. The indicative cost path described for the US reflects the wind farms transitioning off warranty, with a further 39% moving off warranty through this financial year. As stressed earlier, there is scope to further contain this price path with continued emphasis on preventative maintenance rather than reactive maintenance and taking advantage of the fast developing and competitive post-warranty maintenance component markets in the US. Turning to Australia on slide 11, production increased significantly due to contributions from our Capital and Lake Bonnie 3 wind farms and significantly better availability. Turbine availability was comfortably above our financial year 11 target of 95%. We achieved an average price of approximately $83 per megawatt hour, despite historically low wholesale prices in South Australia and New South Wales, which were offset by higher average contract prices. Slide 12 provides further detail around our wind farm operating costs in Australia. The increase in Australian wind farm operating costs is as a result of additional operating assets, a contracted step-up in the O&M cost at Lake Bonnie 2, and to a lesser degree the post-warranty drivers that I described. The indicative cost path described for Australia reflects the wind farms transitioning off warranty through this financial year and financial year 12, with 23% moving off warranty over that period. As for the US, we believe there is scope to further contain this price path, taking advantage of the developing competitive post-warranty maintenance market and our buying power as one of Australia's largest owners. In Australia, we continue to invest in our energy markets capability and capacity, which is described on slide 13. As advised previously, this capability is focused for the longer term on diversifying our channels to market and our customer base, with a short-term focus on risk management associated with our existing wind farms. This risk management focus allowed us to improve the credit quality of our counterparty arrangement at Capital Wind Farm, reduce the effect of network constraints in South Australia, and minimise the impact of negative price events. We'll continue to build our relationships across a broader customer base, particularly those seeking 100% renewable energy sources, which we see as a growing segment of the market. To round out our performance in the first half in Australia, slide 14 provides an update in regard to construction and development activity. The construction of Woodlawn in New South Wales continues to progress well, with civil work well progressed and the first towers being erected over the next few weeks. Completion is expected by the end of, is still expected by the end of 2011. Current development activity is centred around our involvement in the federal government's solar flagships program with our consortium partner Suntech, and the necessary development activities to keep our development pipeline ready for when the right investment environment arises. No further projects will be committed to until market conditions improve and target returns are achievable. Now turning to Germany on slide 15. Production decreased significantly due to much lower wind resource across Europe in general, which is reflected in the decrease in revenue. Slide 16 provides further detail around our wind farm operating costs in Germany. The increase in Germany related to a one-off blade upgrade cost, and the flatter indicative cost path described for German wind farms reflects the wind farm's longer-dated warranty arrangements that we have in Germany. I'll now hand over to Chris.
Thank you, Jeff. I will now take you through the interim financial result, commencing with slide 18. Prior to running over the P&L, I'd like to draw your attention to the MD&A, which is made available with this presentation and accounts. The MD&A is available as a separate document that should provide further detail and colour to this financial presentation. In particular, it has enabled some simplification of the slides, as the MD&A includes items that were previously primarily addressed by way of footnotes. Before I comment on the drivers and period-on-period variances in respect to the P&L, I draw your attention to the change in REC accounting policy that is outlined in detail both in our financial statements and MD&A. This change has been introduced to better match REC production with the economic outcome. Thus, while we previously recognised RECs by way of inventory and deferred revenue, with revenue only being recognised on sale, we now recognise RECs as they are produced. At balance date, we revalue the REC inventory on a mark-to-market basis, taking only downward revaluations through the P&L. This change under the accounting standards also requires restatement of prior period comparatives. Consequently, all numbers in this presentation are directly comparable in this respect. With respect to the P&L, some of the narrative to the principal variances have been provided by Miles and Jeff in their presentations. Revenue, while apparently flat, increased on an underlying basis due to high availability and new production, Capital and Lake Bonney 3, but was offset by low prices in Australia and the US and the impact of FX. EBITDA is down 2.5 million or 3% on a statutory basis, primarily due to the higher operating expenses as assets transition from a warranty to post-warranty environment. Depreciation and amortisation increased due to the flow-through of depreciation associated with the increase in capacity, again that's Capital and Lake Bonney 3, offset by the favourable impact of FX. Net financing costs were up by 4.6 million or 13%, primarily due to the expense of a swap terminated by the counterparty. IEPs, or the US Institutional Equity Partnerships, contribution of 1.7 was an 11.4 million reduction over the prior year, primarily due to the reduction of the tax to account for depreciation and tax losses, along with the movement in residual interest. The tax expense of 0.2 compared to the prior half year of 5.5 benefit was due to the proportionally higher taxable income from the Australian group. The net loss of 34.4 is naturally the outcome of all the items I've just run over. Now to slide 19. This sets out the reconciliation of statutory to economic interest and is only included to bridge the financial statements, which include two US assets that are under IFRS, are fully consolidated to the economic interest view. Infogen believes presenting from an economic interest perspective allows for easier comparability. This approach is consistent with those we've adopted in previous periods and with the MD&A document previously touched on. In the MD&A under section 2.1, you will find the equivalent bridge for the financial year FY10, should you so do require. The revenue waterfall on slide 20 sets out the main components behind the revenue growth of 2.5 million or 2% period on period. The increase in revenue is associated with the new capacity from Capital and Lake Bonney wind farms of 19.7 million being substantially offset by the impact of low prices, principally in Australia, which has a higher mix of merchant prices relative to PPA as compared to the US or Germany. This resulted in a net adverse price variance of 6.5 million. Additionally, foreign exchange negatively impacted by 8.8 billion. Generation sold, although flat at 0.6, had a range of outcomes across the geographies as Jeff talked to in his presentation. Further details are contained in the MD&A section 2 and 7, in particular the latter, which covers the operational performance review by geography. The EBITDA waterfall on slide 21 naturally reflects the impact of the volume, price and capacity deltas as discussed in the revenue waterfall, along with the net impact of foreign exchange of 4.5 million. Furthermore, as Jeff outlined in his presentation, operating costs have increased period on period as assets transition from a warranty to post-warranty environment. These items resulted in operating EBITDA decreasing by 3 million or 3.5%. Group EBITDA of 72.9 was after corporate costs of 8.5, which I'll talk to in the next slide, development costs of 0.5, and the 2.1 million expense associated with the marking to market of the REC inventory balances at 31 December 2010 under the new policy. At the group level, this all translates to an EBITDA margin of 54.2%, which is a decline of 2.2 percentage points over the FY10 half-year results. Corporate costs, as set out on slide 22, have remained as an area of focus as is demonstrated by the ongoing downward trend. At the half-year, the run rate is tracking ahead of target, with annualised savings of 1.2, along with FY10 half-year non-recurring items of approximately 0.7 of a million. The operating cash flow on slide 23 sets out the principal items, half-year on half-year, that bridge operations EBITDA to net operating cash flow. The next slide sets out in a waterfall fashion the FY11 half-year, which I'll talk to you next. The operating cash flow on slide 24 has been impacted by a number of one-offs and timing differences. The termination of a swap by the counterparty resulted in an outflow of 8.6, which is a non-recurring item. The increase in REC inventory represented a further outflow. Additionally, there were a number of timing differences with respect to payables and receivables that should, in part, reverse for the year-end. Lastly, I move to the balance sheet on slide 25. The balance sheet also reflects the impacts of FX, albeit at the 31 December 2010 closing rates. While the impact on profit and loss, as outlined, was unfavourable, the impact on borrowings was a reduction of 112 million. Gearing was held steady, and the debt ratio, EBITDA to net debt on a full group, moved from 6.6 times at 32 to 6.8 times. The group was within its bank leverage covenant at 31 December and expects to continue to be so at 30 June. More detail on the global facility is set out in the MD&A and Appendix B. With this, I hand over back to Miles to conclude.
Thanks, Chris. Turning then to slide 27. The federal government passed amendments to the renewable energy target legislation in June of last year, which quarantine around 90% of the target for utility-scale plants such as wind farms. The benefit of those amendments is only slowly working through the REC markets as surplus small-scale scheme RECs are absorbed over the next 18 months to 2 years. Spot REC prices have improved around 25% since the lows experienced late last year, but current levels of around $36 remain well below levels required to encourage the contract market to facilitate new renewable energy investment. Spot wholesale electricity prices have also been depressed, with New South Wales and South Australia recording 10-year lows during the period. The introduction of a carbon price regime is a positive prospect for the industry, but in the meantime, improved wholesale electricity prices and a strong revival of the REC market will be required to create an environment conducive to new investment. Turning to slide 28. From a production perspective, wind resource has improved this year across the US. We expect this to continue for the remainder of the year. We also expect the German portfolio to have a stronger second half. Turbine availability across the portfolio is exceeding our target of 95%, and we will remain focused on maintaining and improving these availability levels. Together, these factors lead to our expectation that full-year production will be within the original guidance range. From a revenue perspective, some recovery in merchant power prices and REC prices is expected,
but this improvement is likely to continue to be slow. Initial revenue guidance for FY11 was based on the assumption of a weaker Australian dollar as a result of the strong performance of the Australian economy compared with the US and Europe. We now expect that the Australian dollar will remain at or around the current level for the remainder of the financial year. Adjusting original revenue guidance for current FX assumptions, we now expect revenue for the full year to be between $277.8 million and $295.3 million. Finally, on slide 29, and looking further ahead, developments and opportunities that have the potential to add to future earnings and generate security value include, firstly, we remain on track to complete the Woodlawn wind farm by the end of 2011, and our shortlisted proposal under the federal government's solar flagships program remains in the assessment phase. We've developed improved channels to market, including through direct contracting with commercial and industrial customers. The introduction of a carbon price regime and improved wholesale electricity prices in Australia are in prospect. The revival of the REC market is also in prospect in the medium term. Further initiatives to control O&M costs as wind farms transition off warranty are in process, and we are continuing to maintain stringent control of our corporate costs. That concludes the presentation, and so I'd now like to open the conference call for any questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1. There are no questions from the lines. Back to you, Mr. George.
Okay, then. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for participating this evening. As always, if you have any follow-on questions, you can contact Richie Farrell, our Investor Relations Manager. Thank you and good evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you.